2012-40469, United States of America versus Xavier Degollado.
May it please the court. Your honors, there are two issues in this case. The first issue is whether the district court reversibly erred by imposing a five-level enhancement under section 2G2.2B3 for distribution for the receipt or expectation of receipt of a thing of value but not for pecuniary gain. The second issue is whether the district court reversibly erred by imposing restitution in the amount of $765,000. With regard to issue one, subsection B3B says that if the offense level involved distribution for the receipt or expectation of receipt of a thing of value but not for pecuniary gain, the court should increase by five levels. The five-level enhancement was imposed in this case because Mr. Degollado went on a peer-to-peer network, downloaded images and movies into a shared file, and Agent Ulrich accessed that shared file. There is no record evidence that he distributed any images for the receipt or expectation of receipt of a thing of value.
Okay, I realize we don't have a published opinion on this, but I checked, and each one of us has been on at least one unpublished opinion where we found to the contrary of your position. Why should we go against, you know, not just one, but a numerous swath of unpublished opinions, including ones that we ourselves have participated in?
Well, first of all, the opinions, as I read them, start in 2002 with Sistrunk, and all of the opinions build on each other. Since they started in 2002, I believe, none of them, or at least in the beginning, they don't have the benefit of the analysis in Vadnais. In addition, none of them do the analysis that was done in Vadnais by the 11th Circuit.
Okay, but the 11th Circuit itself has not found Vadnais to be all that broad because there's a Bailey case out of the 11th Circuit from this year in which they said Vadnais involves the mere use and failure to turn off of the sharing function. And if there's something more, then we're out of the Vadnais world. And we have that something more here because your client was deliberately putting stuff in a default folder versus a shared folder. He wasn't just failing to turn off a shared function, right?
No. Let me answer your question with regard to Bailey. With regard to Bailey, Bailey's unpublished, but Bailey followed Vadnais because in Bailey they found that the agent asked the defendant, what do you like, before any sharing went on. And so Bailey said, with the discussion of what do you like by the agent, it was clear that Bailey was going to receive something in return. So Bailey did not abandon Vadnais. Bailey still required that the evidence show that there was an expectation of receipt of something of value. I'm sorry, I forgot. What was your second question?
In Vadnais, the point was that he didn't turn off the share function. It was sort of a passive sharing. Your guy had two folders, and he would knowingly put some in the share and some of the default. So it is more active than Vadnais.
No, Your Honor, I didn't read the record like that, frankly. I mean, I read it as the default folder. As I understand LimeWire, the default folder, the shared folder is the default folder. And maybe I've misread the record, but I thought it was going into the default folder, which is the shared folder. In other words, and I think Vadnais talks about this, when you go on LimeWire, if you don't do anything to the settings, you're going to download into the shared folder, which is the default set. Let's just call it the default setting, is the shared folder. So, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but even if there were two folders, it doesn't mean he was distributing with the expectation of the receipt of something of value. In other words, what Vadnais requires is some connection between the distribution and getting something back. And that's what Bailey shows you, if you want to rely on Bailey, an unpublished opinion, that there was an expectation of getting something back.
Counsel, you used the word barter. Now, if they did barter, that's something of value without any question, isn't it?
Your Honor, if they
did. It would have to be money or property otherwise.
Sure, if they did barter, but what you can see, counsel's comment was in those chat rooms, they barter, so to speak. Number one, the case didn't involve chat rooms. It's like counsel saying to the court, Your Honor, my client did the stabbing, but the case involved a shooting and the person died from a gunshot wound. You'd say, that's not a concession. In fact, this court in the court has held, even where counsel had conceded that the 16-level enhancement applied in an illegal reentry case, that wasn't a knowing concession. Here, counsel didn't concede that Mr. De Galata was bartering. He said bartering generally goes on, and he conceded something that's not even part of the case. Well, so
I have a related question. Was he offering to participate in the distribution of child pornography per the proffer? What did he offer to participate, or was that just a really broadly worded proffer that the government offered?
And that's a very good question, Your Honor, because the PSR, when it's describing Agent Ulrich's investigation, uses that phrase. But when you read the PSR in context, Agent Ulrich began his investigation his whole investigation was looking into peer-to-peer networks. And so when you read the paragraphs, you see he went on peer-to-peer networks and looked for shared files. He found shared files. He used, I think it's Who Is It, and found out that Mr. De Galato's files were on Roadrunner. Then he subpoenaed Roadrunner, found the address for the shared files, and went to the house, got a search warrant and went to the house. So in context, even though the PSR makes that broad statement, I don't see any evidence that there was an offer to distribute. I read that as just being he found a shared file that had images in it. Does that answer your question?
It does. I'm confused. If we were to find that five-level enhancement applies as a bright line anytime you're in a peer-to-peer and you don't turn off the function, then what happens to the two-level enhancement for simple distribution? Is it just encompass that and we never have the two-level unless somebody decides to use that one instead, but there's no difference in conduct? It's somewhat of a friendly question.
Yes, actually. Your Honor. Yes, thank you. The two-level enhancement would apply because under the sentencing guidelines, as you know, as you go down the list, you apply and if the higher ones don't apply, you apply the lower ones. Here, we can see there clearly was distribution.
So does that mean that in every single case where you're in a peer-to-peer and you don't turn off, that you're going to get the five instead of the two from now on if we hold this? Or is there some rule? Maybe I should ask the government that.
I think it would be saying that, yes, that the five-level applies and the two-level has no meaning at all in the peer-to-peer case where you don't turn on, where the default file is just the shared file. And I think that would be contrary to the guidelines.
But he knew he was going, that he was downloading into a shared file, whether that's the default or not. He knew that. I mean, he admitted that.
I believe that's the case, Your Honor.
Okay, so this isn't something where he's just downloading stuff and he has no idea what's what. You know, it's just like he doesn't know all this computer stuff. He did know he was downloading into a shared file.
I believe that's the case. I'd have to look at the PSR again to be sure, but I do believe that's the case. But, Your Honor, downloading into the shared file is just, I can see distributing. Right, because other people, it's going to can go to other people, but it doesn't mean that it's doing it with the expectation of receiving something back in value. So that's why downloading into the shared file would get you the two-level enhancement, but shouldn't get you the five-level enhancement. And I can see that there can be other evidence that can get you the five-level enhancement. For example,
but see, the problem is short of an admission. What does that? Short of an admission that I intended the other guy to send me something back, or like this parlay that you're talking about with the undercover officer, then how do you ever prove intent? I mean, it's always a matter of inference from the evidence. And here this guy is knowingly downloading. Typically you share so that somebody will share back. That's what sharing's about.
Well, that's right, and that's the inference that Vadnais says is not a valid inference the way LimeWire
no,
works.
No, because Vadnais was really just dealing with a guy who just merely didn't turn something off, not somebody who was knowingly doing this. But in any event, you got Vadnais in the 11th Circuit, and you've got 10 cases or so, I mean, I didn't count them, of us saying the other way. And you've got the 8th Circuit saying the other way. So you've got other circuits, including the very three up here, going a different way.
You do, but there's also not the analysis of LimeWire in any of those opinions. I mean, the 8th Circuit in Stoltz just merely said, well, you're going on there, and so you're expecting something in return, so you get the five levels. But there's not an analysis of how LimeWire works.
Well, let me ask you, though, because this gets back to what your what the lawyer for your client said to the district judge. How was the district judge given the exact argument you're making here? I mean, the lawyer says, yeah, this is kind of what they do in these chat rooms, and I agree he used kind of a broad term there that maybe isn't the right term. But how did he cue the district judge into the idea that he's saying, look, a shared file isn't the same thing as getting something back?
Well, I don't think he had to, in my view, make the same argument below as long as he preserved the issue. You can make different arguments on appeal. He preserved the issue, number one, by saying this five-level enhancement doesn't apply because in a written objection, there was no expectation of a receipt of value. Number two, the court ruled on it, and so I think it is.
Yeah, but the problem is, to me, it was very misleading. The discussion with the district judge focused on whether there has to be money, you know, pecuniary gain, and the judge took it as you're talking about, I have to get money, which he clearly didn't. And the judge said bartering's enough. And the lawyer didn't say, wait a minute, what I mean, judge, is instead he goes off on this thing about the chat room. So it seems to me he really led the judge down the wrong path. I, as the district judge, would not have understood the argument you're making now is the argument you were making there.
Your Honor, all I can say is I would concede I think he was ineffective. I mean, I think it's like saying, like I said, my client stabbed the victim when the case is all about a gunshot wound. The case I was struggling to find is Andino Ortega, where defense counsel conceded that the 16-level, or he didn't concede, he said the 16-level enhancement applied, and this court found that that wasn't a knowing concession. So I think the written objection preserved it, the ruling preserved it, the statement by counsel is not a concession, but instead a, forgive my language, a bonehead statement that showed that counsel didn't even understand what he was doing.
Is the lack of understanding of the technology readily apparent in the?
From my view, yes, Your Honor. Talking about chat rooms when the whole case
it
is about.
It doesn't involve chat rooms. I mean,
Your Honor.
Can I ask a question real quickly about the? If we follow our existing precedent, you lose the second issue, right? So.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Not exactly. I don't think I lose. The issue about proximate cause with regard to everything but the last prong, I lose. But there's an argument that I say the other losses, there was no proximate cause shown with regard to the last prong because in In re Amy, this court said that the last prong, other losses, required proximate cause. And the harm here happened before my client committed the crime. So I lose on the major issue, but there is an issue for the court to decide on the other losses prong.
Has your client got $760,000 to give to Vicki?
I don't believe so, no, Your Honor. He has appointed counsel on appeal, so no. But, of course, he'll be hounded for the rest of his life.
The rest of his life if there's this elect debt.
What evidence is in the record relating to Vicki's damages and the time of the offense?
The reports, there are psychological evaluation, there's a vocational evaluation, there's a hearing transcript, and other various economic reports that are dated prior to the date of my client's offense. And so this court held in In re Amy Unknown that all of the prongs but the other losses prong does not require proximate cause. So we're preserving that for the Supreme Court's going to decide Paroline this year. But this court held in In Re Amy Unknown that the other losses prong does require proximate cause. And so our argument is that there is no showing of proximate cause with regard to the other losses. Your Honors.
Can we hold this pending Paroline?
Your Honor, given my client's sentence of, I believe it was 210 months, if the court decides, the short answer is yes, but I just want to explain why. My client's sentence was 210 months. If the court decides in Mr. De Galata's favor on the first issue, that could make as much as a 5-year swing in his sentence, which would mean that Paroline's going to come out well before his sentence is completed. So yes, Your Honor, I think you may hold it. Thank you, Your Honor.
Could I have one thing that maybe you can cover when you come back on rebuttal, or maybe you can cover it right now and you can just do it for free here with no use of your time. I noticed the briefs are under seal. I don't know what justification there is in this case for sealing the entire brief. I think that should be done sparingly under our guidance that we receive from our judicial conference and our all of these guidelines that say that briefs shouldn't be sealed willy-nilly or complete briefs. Do you have a view as to the sealing of the briefs?
Yes, Your Honor, and frankly, it was on my motion. And the reason I did it, I was out of abundance of caution, because in the lower court, all of the Vicki materials were under seal. And that because that was a substantial part of the brief, I should move to unseal the Vicki materials, and I didn't think I should be filing a brief for public consumption with the Vicki materials being under seal. So that's why I did it, and I apologize if.
No,
if
so it's your view that the Vicki materials are such a big part of this brief that this unique case warrants the entire sealing, the continued sealing of the entire brief? Is that your position?
Your Honor, my position, frankly, is the Vicki materials have been out there for so long in so many cases that perhaps they don't require sealing and they don't use her real name. So I don't think so, but I just because...
You were trying to be careful.
I was between a rock and a hard place. The district court materials were under seal, and I didn't want to violate that order, and that's why I did it, and I apologize.
There's no apology necessary. I'm just trying to figure out if the brief should continue to be sealed or not. Okay. And I think I have your answer.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Do you believe the brief should be sealed? Can we just deal with that real quickly?
May it please the court, Richard Berry for the United States. The short answer would be I did essentially the same thing Mr. Sokolow did for essentially the same reasons, out of an abundance of caution, because of the nature of the material discussed and because of Vicki's obviously unfortunate circumstances.
Is there a legal basis for sealing the briefs at this point?
No, I would have to agree with Mr. Sokolow on that point. The Vicki materials are far too public as it is now. There's nothing in the brief that would add anything to what's already in the public domain.
I mean, it seems to me the pictures themselves and so forth ought to be sealed, but, you know, talking about the fact that there is a Vicki, I don't see, you know, since we don't name her, there's not a lot of discussion really about what's even in these pictures to speak of. I don't see the issue. I do see the issue with the actual pictures, anything that would identify her. I completely agree that should be sealed, but I don't see that in y'all's briefs.
Well, no, and I agree, and I would also echo Mr. Sokolow's apology to the court. I think we were both operating out of an overabundance of caution. Better to let you make that call than for us to make it, frankly.
Okay, thank you.
And unfortunately, not only are the pictures available on the internet, all of her personal information is available.
But we would not be perpetuating that by unsealing your briefs.
No, Your Honor.
The names and the details aren't in there.
No, Your Honor. To the best of my knowledge, there's absolutely nothing in the record that's not already public knowledge. To address the first issue.
Yeah, can you address the question of, I had understood that in Vadnay there really wasn't anything other than he's just downloading without regard to where it goes, whereas your guy or your opponent here did know it was going into a shared file. Does that make the difference, or what makes the difference if we were inclined to follow VADNE?
If I could offer a brief explanation, LimeWire and FrostWire are essentially old shareware. It was designed to swap copyrighted music and movies without paying a copyright fee. LimeWire was eventually put out of business by the people that collect royalties for the recording industry. And I believe that's discussed in one of my footnotes. The newer information, the newer shareware is called GigaTribe, where the information is not available to other internet users until, and I forget the exact term, you've exchanged a token. It's basically like friending someone or liking them. You meet on the internet and discuss things, and then you realize you're both pedophiles, and you then allow them to see your files, as opposed to LimeWire and FrostWire, where material is by default downloaded to your default folder or your shared folder, which I agree with Mr. Sokol. My understanding is the default and shared folders are one and the same.
Okay, but he knew that.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
So it wasn't just some random thing he's downloading, has no idea, you know, like, for example, if I go to just a regular, you know, Amazon.com, I have no idea that they're collecting all this information on me. I'm just trying to buy a book. Versus I know and I want them to collect some particular information about me as I buy this book. Your opponent is the latter. He knew he's going into a shared file, whether it's default or not.
Yes, Your Honor, I believe that you can conclude that he is sufficiently sophisticated to know that everything is going into a shared or default folder and that other child pornographers will have that information readily available without any further effort on his part.
So how does that tell us he intends to get something out of it by sharing?
Which segues very nicely into Judge Elrod's question. There are several individual points. The crux of the argument is that the district court can draw a reasonable inference from the facts when determining whether to apply an enhancement. In this case, and I'll start with the best single piece of evidence, prior to sentencing, defense counsel asked that Mr. DeGalato be examined by a licensed psychologist, Dr. Pena. He was examined. In Dr. Pena's report at page 5, Dr. Pena notes, Mr. DeGalato, he describes that he bought a computer program wherein he could file share images or movies. So, echoing your earlier comment, Judge Haynes, short of an admission, I respectfully submit that is an admission, separate and apart from his defense attorney's ill-chosen but completely binding statement at sentencing. He describes
rather attenuated from him.
The
description of a psychologist analyzing him. I mean, how do we, the psychologist, it's rather attenuated that he bought some program that might allow file sharing. Doesn't say that he's sharing these pictures as a thing of value. It's you have to pile inference upon inference upon inference.
I think it's just an understanding of child deviant, pedophiles. As Dr. Pena testified and as Judge Alvarez stated at sentencing, pedophiles download files and enjoy them, for lack of a better term, and then become tired of the files. They are constantly looking for new files, files that they have not previously seen.
What evidence is there in the record that this person offered was going to get a thing of value? What specifically, that he was either trolling for that or that he was already receiving or doing that?
Okay, there's a statement to Dr. Pena that I just discussed. He bought a program specifically to file share, not to download and collect, but to share images and movies. He stated,
Is the mere fact of sharing, like if I'm gonna share my notepad here with Judge Elrod, is that anticipating that she'd share her notepad if I needed it? Is that the idea, that sharing implies kind of a mutuality?
In part, it is an implied mutuality. In part, it's based on an understanding of how the early programs, and particularly later programs such as GigaTribe, which is discussed in both VADNE and Bailey, operate. the more files that I have available, then the more files, the more users online I see, or I can password protect the files.
But that's not true for this LimeWire.
That's not true of LimeWire.
So we can't use that. We have to use what he had.
But you can infer from the fact that Dr. Pena's report also mentions he had both LimeWire and FrostWire that he was sufficiently sophisticated that he understood the more files you have available, the more files will be made available to you.
Is there something that says that more things were available to him because he put things out there?
In some of the unpublished opinions that the court was discussing earlier, there's a discussion that both LimeWire and FrostWire, which are fairly old programs, reduce the download speed if you don't have a large number of files in your shared folder. So to get more files more quickly over the internet, you would have a large number of files in your shared folder.
Is that in this record, in this case, that he got quicker access because he put things out there, and so that's a thing of value? Is that in this case?
No. There is the fact that the agent downloaded not once but twice from his shared folder and that he knew the function of the shared folder.
Okay. So when do we use the 2 instead of the 5?
As Judge Haynes suggested in her question, if someone were completely ignorant of how software functions, if you were completely unaware of the purpose of the shared folder.
You might not get the 2 then at all because you wouldn't be distributing necessarily. I mean, if you don't even understand that you're in a shared world, you wouldn't be distributing if you were ignorant of that.
Some of the unpublished opinions from this court flatly state that even unknowing sharing would qualify for the 2-level enhancement in B3F.
Those are unpublished opinions. I'm trying to figure out when does 2 apply and when does 5 apply. Are you saying 5 always applies when you are on a peer-to-peer sharing?
No, Your Honor, I'm not. I'm saying that 5 would apply in this particular case because he was sufficiently sophisticated to understand that by making files available, more files would be available.
We took this case. We're having oral argument. We're not having an unpublished case on this, just in the summary calendar. It may in turn be an unpublished case. We don't know that yet. But we're all very sophisticated parties that litigate in the Fifth Circuit. So I'm trying to figure out what is the rule. We may not be able to have a rule based upon this case since this is the old software that's not the new kind. I mean, the old file sharing. So maybe there isn't a rule from this case, and this is just a one-off. But if there was a rule, what is the rule that the government proposes? Is it that in every peer-to-peer where you don't opt out that you are liable because you're always trading something of value? So you should always get the 5-level enhancement unless it shows that you had no knowledge that you could trade of something of value.
No, Your Honor, I would respectfully suggest that each one turns on its own facts, and if I were to suggest you always get the 5-level enhancement, then that would make the 2-level enhancement essentially meaningless.
I'm trying to find a time where the 2 would apply. If I don't agree that if you are totally ignorant that you could be liable for distribution because there's an intent requirement, can you give me another scenario where the 2 would apply but the 5 would? Because you're saying these images are something of value, so automatically anytime you exchange these images, you're exchanging something of value. So by definition, you always get the 5 as long as you know what you're doing.
As long as you know what you're doing. But again, each case would be tied to its own.
So you never get the 2. You believe you can get the 2 for ignorance, if you do it unwittingly.
That was one of the 2 scenarios suggested in the unpublished cases, that you can get them even if you leave the default setting and share with others without any.
What if you turn the share off, but then you think, oh, my buddy John would really like to see this one picture, and you send it to him? Would that be a 2 but not a 5?
Perhaps, yes, Your Honor, because there's no clear indication in your facts that there's an expectation of response, unless, of course, John is also a fellow pedophile, and you're thinking, if I send something to John, then he will send something back.
Like
if it's a simple one-off.
When people send a cartoon around that they think would be amusing, they just send it, and I don't know if anybody's ever going to send a cartoon. I'm saying you send it to John, or Mr. De Goyado sends it to John under that same, like, hey, look at this. I thought this was particularly interesting.
then that would be an appropriate application of the two-level enhancement under subsection F.
That would be highly unlikely because pedophiles don't just say, see this cool joke. They wait because, as was described earlier, they wait and have some kind of trust built up amongst the pedophiles before they start sharing images because there's this kind of, this is taboo, obviously, and it's illegal as opposed to sending a joke email around. Isn't that right? They have to identify each other as people being interested in that because even receiving and viewing of that could cause you to be liable for some crime.
That is absolutely correct, and that explains in part the evolution from LimeWire and FrostWire to GigaTribe. A person is allowed to conceal their files until you've established some sort of trust with other users on the network, and then you can extend trust to individual users so that they can see your files, and they in turn must reciprocate before you can see their files, reducing, I assume, the chances that you'll be apprehended.
Do you have a view on the INRI, Amy, whether or not we should wait for Paroline?
I would agree with Mr. Sokolow. One anticipates that INRI Paroline would be decided in the fairly near future and that would be dispositive of the second issue. I would note in passing that Judge Alvarez specifically found proximate cause as to each and every one of the damage amounts that the victim in Vicky's case requested, Ms. Hepburn requested in the letter on behalf of Vicky.
Well, so then would you need to wait? Because you could say even if proximate cause is required,
Judge Alvarez found
here, and we can't say that was clearly erroneous. I mean, you know.
Yes, exactly. Judge Alvarez specifically found proximate cause as to all the damages.
Was there a basis to find it whenever this was a pre, given the timing of the crime versus the...
In addition to the items that Mr. Sokolow cataloged that were supplied by Ms. Hepburn, there's an original statement and an updated statement from Vicky herself, and I believe there's two separate statements from her mother and one statement from her stepfather discussing the fact that, which is reflected in Dr. Pena's testimony concerning Mr. DeGalato, she was in the process of recovering from what had happened to her as a child, and then she discovered that her father had videotaped the incidents and that they were available on the internet to people all over the world, which understandably caused her perhaps greater shock and horror than the original incidents themselves. And she said, basically, she is always overcome with panic attacks. She is always wondering if someone has seen the videos, so that she will need counseling for a very long period of time.
So this is some sort of collective proximate cause that all of the pedophiles that are consumers of this product are the cause of the supply because there's a demand?
In essence, yes.
So even if proximate cause is required for A through E, then that is the proximate cause, that by being part of the market, of the demand, you create the supply, and the creation of the supply is the harm to Vicky.
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, regardless of how Paroline comes out, I mean, we all agree that F requires proximate cause, the so-called other losses. So what evidence is there that the other loss, is it just, again, the collective proximate cause? Is that what the other losses are?
Judge Alvarez was reviewing the loss amounts for each of the categories at the restitution hearing and said that although the material submitted by Attorney Hepburn was not perhaps a model of clarity, that some of the $40,000 under item F could actually be included in subcategories A through E, so that in the first instance, paragraph F losses might be included in an earlier subparagraph, and in the second instance, yes, Your Honor, it would be the sort of continuing proximate cause. Returning to Judge Elrod's question, as a further demonstration, Mr. DeGalato's sophistication at the rearrangement, there was a discussion of the number of images on the computer, which continued to escalate as the laptop was analyzed. Mr. DeGalato himself explained that as you are downloading a file using LimeWire, the software creates three files, and two of them were apparently not finished, but there was one finished file. So for each video, that there would be three separate files, and he was concerned that he would somehow be overcharged for the number of files, again indicating his sophistication with the use of LimeWire. And Dr. Pena noted in his report that there was, that DeGalotto had discussed both LimeWire and FrostWire, suggesting that he had perhaps upgraded his software.
I'm interested in your take on this whole exchange with Mr. Sanchez in the court, where he says this thing about the chat rooms and all that. The concern I have is, I would tend to agree with your counsel opposite that if all that had happened was the written objection that said there shouldn't have five levels because there's no exchange for thing of value, period, you know, he might have something. He made the argument.
Sure.
The problem I have is the way that it was argued to the court, it's like it's limited to the idea that there was no money exchange, and the judge correctly rules, and we all agree correctly rules, that bartering's good enough, and the lawyer admits there was a barter. And so to me, that negates any sense that there's some generic thing the judge should be looking for. It's almost, invited error might be the wrong term, but it's almost that way. I don't know how the judge would be aware that you're making the argument that there wasn't a barter when the lawyer says there was a barter, but there wasn't money. And the judge says, well, you don't need money, which is absolutely right.
Perhaps reading between the lines, if you'll forgive the expression. I agree completely with the crux of your comment. If you look at the enhancements, if one looks at the enhancements in 2G2.2B3, there are six enhancements, A through F, and it seems to me that the defense attorney was trying to avoid the enhancement in subparagraph A, which is not less than five levels if the files are swapped for pecuniary gain. Subject to the table in 2B1.1 for economic loss. If they are exchanged for pecuniary gain, then, of course, a defendant would get more than five levels. The crux of my answer would be it seemed to me, reading the transcript, that he was trying to avoid the highest possible enhancement in A and backed into B. Having said that, he said what he said.
Yeah, he said, and putting aside this thing about the chat rooms, he said, and just to point out to the court that other than the videos or the image, that there was never a thing of value. And then the judge says, well, those are actually considered a thing of value. Rules correctly. Everybody
right.
Admits. To me, that's very concerning if we say that's preserved error, because gotcha, over here, you use some magic words in the written objection. When it was argued to the court, to me, it's very clear what's being argued, and it's a pecuniary gain issue, which we all agree wasn't necessary.
Right, and concession may not have been the right term either, but that's precisely why I argued the first issue the way I did, starting with the fact that his defense attorney said, I see that my time has expired.
You may finish your statement.
Thank you. Admitted, conceded, said, whatever, that there was no pecuniary gain, but literally stated in front of DeGalotto, he exchanged the files and videos for other files and videos, which is precisely what Dr. Pena said a pedophile would do. There would be an ongoing, continued exchange of files and videos for new and different files and videos.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rana.
Honor, just hopefully a few comments. The rule for this type of case is in Vadnais that there must be some other evidence showing that the defendant reasonably believed he would receive something of value by making his files available for distribution. The evidence must show a connection between the defendant's distribution and the receipt or expectation of receipt of a thing of value. That's not a quote, that's a paraphrase, but that's what Vadnais says. Second, Vadnais rebuts the inferential argument. It's on page 1210 where it says the district court made an erroneous inference here. Number third, there is no evidence of higher download speed as there was in Griner, where the Tenth Circuit found that the defendant stated he was going to get a higher download speed. Third or fourth, with regard to proximate cause, I want to make my argument clear. The harm happened before the defendant, the other losses, because we know what Amy, In re Amy says. The other losses happened before the defendant acted. So for a judge to say, I find it's group proximate cause, is not restitution. It's punitive. It's saying these other people caused this harm. You committed a crime after that, so I'm going to make you pay for it. That's not restitution. Restitution is a loss that you could get in a contractual civil case, saying I'm going to make you pay for what these other people did, even though you didn't cause the loss, is punitive and not restitution. And so the court below can't just say, well, it's a big group loss and it's they all are together. The evidence has to show that the defendant caused the other losses.
Assuming arguendo that we agree that what the counsel said was some sort of concession that the files themselves were a thing of value, is the right answer for this case to say that it's there is some other evidence because we have a concession, and then leave for another day whether that is alone enough, whether or not the sharing is enough? I know you believe the counsel erred. You've been very forthright about that, and
yes.
So maybe the error is what's caused that some other evidence, and that there's not anything else in the record except for that. Assuming we agree with you, then that would be the decision for this case, in which case your client may or may not have other avenues.
I think I would slice it differently, because I think the court took the concession to mean there was a thing of value, but the concession, assuming there was one, was a thing of value, doesn't show that there was an expectation of receipt of something of value. So just the concession that there was a thing of value doesn't get you to the expectation.
What does the term barter mean? There's nothing else that barter means. I'm giving you something in exchange for something. I'm giving you this notepad in exchange for your pen. That's a barter.
Right, but the
if I just say I'm giving you this notepad, that's a gift.
I agree. We could, here standing here today, we could understand someone using barter to take it that way, but the court didn't. The court took it as an argument that there was nothing of value. So I don't think the court took it as a concession on expectation of receipt. In addition,
is there any way that you could construe this discussion about bartering to mean that the lawyer is saying, hey, just putting something in a file share folder isn't an exchange? There's no way you can say that. So that it was a misleading of the district court, if nothing else. If he really was meaning to make that argument, he sure didn't make it, and he misled the district court in the process, even by what you just said.
Well,
the judge thinks they're talking about thing of value. That's your argument. Well, then you're misleading the court.
Well, that's my backup argument, but that's the way the court understood it. Yes, Your Honor.
How can you construe the word barter any other way than an exchange of something other than money, exchange of value for something other than money? I give you a notepad for a pen. That's a barter.
Your Honor, I'm agreeing that standing here today, we would say that. But my backup argument is that the court didn't focus on the barter part, the court focused on the value part. So I'm not disagreeing that ordinarily a person would understand it that way. Your Honors, for all these reasons, I respectfully request that you vacate the sentence and remand for resentencing. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, both counsel are very prepared today. Thank you. Thank you.